I study these cloud-like objects, and they're kind of gas clouds that have blown out of our galaxy. And I often feel like I'm one of those clouds, you know, I'm from that reference point, and I can feel the movement happening to me. It definitely is a visual thing, but it's also like a feeling thing that I get in my belly, you know, as if I was on like a swing or something.
Welcome to How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity, where artists pull back the curtain on their creative practices and share how they listen, play, embody, imagine, model, and collaborate towards discovering something new. In this episode, astronomer, astrophysicist, and traditional knowledge holder Carly Noon takes us on a journey to the stars. She tells us about the creativity that emerges when trying to draw and describe the movements of the sky. She also speaks about the surprising connections that she has found between Indigenous sky knowledge from the first astronomers and Western approaches to reading the night sky.
My full name is Carly Linton Noon. I am a Gamilaroi Yinna, which means I am an Aboriginal woman. I grew up in northern New South Wales in a wonderful country town called Tamworth. And I spend most of my time thinking about the sky. I'm currently in the midst of an astrophysics PhD, so I'm thinking about the sky a lot. But with my heritage and my culture, like I typically spend a lot of time thinking about the sky, not just through a Western lens, but through a Gamilaroi lens or through an Indigenous lens. And I'm really interested in how Indigenous people are placed in the future of scientific endeavours, the space industry, space exploration, and Indigenous environmental stewardship. I really love those moments of joy and awe you can sometimes experience when you look up at the night sky. When I was just a little girl and I was looking out the window from my bed, it was nighttime, and this is in Tamworth. I lived just a little bit outside of the town as well. So, you know, we didn't have much light pollution there. We had beautiful skies, but it was actually this incredible storm that was happening at the time. And there was just constant lightning going off all night. And I stayed up all night just sitting on my bed, looking out my window, just watching this lightning and just feeling the magic of it. I was driving back to Tamworth one night. Unfortunately, it was for some sorry business. And, you know, it's kind of a time when we're in really deep reflection and thought and remembrance. And I was driving back home from Canberra to Tamworth. It's quite a long drive, and you drive kind of inner New South Wales to get there. And I stopped just to stretch, and I'm in the middle of pretty much nowhere. We were about 2 hours away from any type of town, and I got out of the car and just went for a stretch. I was just absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of light that was shining down on us from the sky. People are really lucky to be able to experience this. Being able to see the Milky Way is something that 95% of Australians don't have the opportunity to see based on where they live, just because of the insidious light pollution problem the modern world is experiencing. So, you know, not only was I seeing the stunning Milky Way, but I literally couldn't see a part of the sky that wasn't absolutely covered in starlight. Like, you could not see any blank sky anywhere. It was so overwhelmingly brilliant and just stunning and breathtaking. And I just really hadn't experienced the sky like that before. And I think it had come to me at a time that I needed to be reminded of how beautiful the world is. When I first went to preschool, I went to an Aboriginal preschool, and, you know, I had family there, and it was a school that, like, my older sister had gone to, and you know, we learn about culture, we learn a bit of language, we knew who we were, and we knew how we connected to our surroundings. And then going into primary school, I went into a more mainstream school. And so I was really lucky because I had both of these experiences and both of these teachings. And I think that was a huge help for me in terms of being able to approach my learning in a way that siloing things off into their own little thing wasn't something that was a default for me. For me, that was a choice that, you know, people made or teachers made or, you know, whoever the schools were making, but it wasn't the default choice for me. In particular, one auntie used to come and sit with me all the time. Every Wednesday she would come over and teach me maths and try to teach me English. And I just absolutely loved learning maths with her. And she turned it into this really fun, playful activity that has absolutely helped me embrace maths and be engaged with it in a way that I was never before that. But I think what Arnie really gave me was this sense that learning can be really enjoyable. Also that I could teach myself. That was another really, really life-changing skill that she gave me. Before that, I was just kind of like, okay, well, you got to go to school and that's where all the learning happens. But that's not the case at all. And that was actually integral to get me into science and maths, because before going into it, I had no background in it. And I actually had to teach myself, you know, year 11, year 12 advanced maths and physics. So experiencing creativity in my job kind of happens in two ways, I guess. In my galaxy research, my Milky Way research, I think some of the funnest times are when I have a result, but the result is so bizarre and so confusing, and you have to spend so much brain power in trying to interpret the results. Is it a real result? Is there an issue somewhere? Did I do something wrong? Or is this reality? And trying to take the result and almost work, you have to work backwards to try and understand what's happening. You know, could this be a possibility? And trying to imagine the incredibly abstract and bizarre circumstance that could create that result or that reality. But on the flip side, when I'm being most creative with, say, my research into Indigenous sky knowledge or, you know, Indigenous peoples and knowledge and how they're positioned today, that's really it. It's about imagining, how can we as a society get better? How can we do things better? How can we grow and improve and learn from the past? And really trying to draw out where I see Indigenous culture and people and their role in that best case scenario future. So when I'm turning, say, a result or an equation or a story into a diagram or an image, I think intuitively I already understand and know all the different pieces of the puzzle. It's really just about presenting it in a way that, for one, is in a still image. So when I'm doing science, I'm mostly thinking about different motions that are happening and different dynamics that are happening within our galaxy. And we all have a really great intuition on how things move because we experience movement all the time. So I always have this kind of moving picture going on in my mind of what's happening in a particular environment or situation. And so the hard part is actually turning that into a still image where, you know, still trying to capture that it is a dynamic image within a still image. I don't even feel like it's in my brain. I feel like I feel it in my gut. Like, I feel the movement. I study these cloud-like objects, and they're kind of gas clouds that have blown out of our galaxy. And I often feel like I'm one of those clouds, you know, I'm from that reference point and I can feel the movement happening to me. It definitely is a visual thing, but it's also like a feeling thing that I get in my belly, you know, as if I was on like a swing or something. when you study physics or maths, you get really good at thinking about different things through different reference points. So yes, sometimes I'm that cloud, but also sometimes I'm above the galaxy, looking down onto it and trying to picture it from that angle. Sometimes I'm inside the galaxy, and you know, we're all inside the galaxy, so that one's really easy to imagine. But yeah, it's an incredible switch that gets flipped when you realize that you can kind of take yourself out of your known reference point and place yourself somewhere else. I think I learned really quickly that through learning Indigenous culture and knowledges, it's actually a little bit wrong how we have it today. We position Indigenous studies in, you know, the social sciences or the arts, but as we know today, Indigenous knowledge covers everything. Every subject matter can be included in the same story. You know, it's not split up like we do in Western society. So when I really started to grapple with that and really started to experience the multifaceted nature of Indigenous knowledges, I could really quickly see that they're actually not that different. You know, the stuff I'm learning in my astronomy lectures or my physics lectures, they're really not that different at all to what I'm learning through the stories that I might be hearing from a nanny or uncle. In both, you learn about the relationships. It's just kind of expressed differently. But even the two knowledge systems themselves are related and, you know, have this ongoing relationship. So science communication is such a fun and creative work to be involved in. You know, you're constantly trying to think of new and better ways to describe things. Storytelling is absolutely a part of the toolkit and certainly my approach to science communication. And I think for me, it really starts with who I am, trying to really, you know, do my ancestors proud, I guess. Creativity for me is about not allowing rules or any confinements on the process come seeping its way in. Creativity for me is really about freedom and having the freedom and flexibility as well. Flexibility in my thoughts, in my patterns, in my ability to perhaps recognize a pattern. It's about the flexibility to be able to move things in my mind in ways that aren't limited by things that I have been taught or assumptions that I may have accidentally, unconsciously made along the way. You really do have to become aware of those sneaky little assumptions and, you know, sometimes even rules that you place on yourself, trying to imagine something that hasn't been imagined before.
This episode is part of a series of interviews with extraordinary people talking about their creative practice. You can find the rest of the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can also purchase our book titled How to Play in Slow Time, which unpacks the theory, practice, and teaching approaches to creativity from Brill Publishers at brill.com. How to Play in Slow Time was created and produced by Charlotte Farrell, Alexandra Telamo, Brioni Trezise, and Maria White. Edited and scored with original music by Tom Hogan. Special thanks goes out to the Technical Resource Centre and the Creative Practice Lab at UNSW Sydney, where our podcast was recorded. UNSW Sydney exists on the lands and waters that have been cared for since time immemorial by the Bidjigal people of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty has never ceded. I'm Alex Telmo, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity.